I'm reading this and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is like, this is exactly what I was looking for. This makes sense. Like, I understand now why I'm sick. And I also understand, like, the way I was living was killing me, right? I have a part to play in my disease, and that's empowering, right? I mean, anybody who's listening to this, who's an entrepreneur, knows, like, you have to take responsibility for your situation, right? Yep, exactly. Like, and the reality of life is that wherever you are right now is the result of the decisions you've made. Mm-hmm. But people don't like that because they think you're blaming the victim. Mm-hmm. When you talk that way, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, it's empowering. It's empowering to say, wait a second, this is my fault. If this is my fault, right, then that means I can change my life. If I contributed to my disease, then maybe I can contribute to my health and healing.
It's Trevor here with another episode of the Carrot Cast. And I've got an amazing guest on today. This guest has a lot of ties into what you're doing on the real estate side. He owns a bunch of rental homes, has been in real estate for years, but that's not the reason I'm bringing him on here. I'm bringing Chris on to this episode of the Carrot Cast because him and I met at a mastermind. I think the first time, Chris, we were at one a couple times ago. Like, it wasn't just this last month, right? I think we met one
other. Yeah, it was like a hackathon event, right?
That's right, dude. That's what it was, the Funnel Hackathon event. And I'll introduce everyone to Chris Work here in a second, but the context I want to give it is this, is we'd met at a marketing event in Boise, Idaho. And I really resonated with this story because when all of us are out there chasing goals and trying to grow the financial side of it, and maybe trying to get some freedom and flexibility and make some impact, the part that oftentimes we ignore the most is our health. And we think that the health is going to be there later. And you'll hear Chris's story, but that wasn't the case for him. A little over a decade ago, he was diagnosed with cancer, really aggressive form of cancer. You'll learn about that. And you're going to kind of hear his journey and how he changed his life and changed his health. I'm so passionate about it because I'm in my more physically active, more physically fit, getting my diet changed. I'm like, I want to bring him on here so I can learn a bunch of stuff. I've been reading his book and I want everyone else to benefit from the same thing. So Chris Work, welcome to the podcast, man.
What's up, Trevor? Thanks for having me, man.
Dude, for sure. So to give people a little bit of context, and we'll dive into the book, Chris Beat Cancer. I want everyone to write that down and go to Amazon right now before you get further in the episode and go get this. Even there it is right there. There it is right there. And I've got my book. It's not in my office. It's actually on my nightstand at my house because I'm in the middle of reading it right now. And even if you don't have cancer, especially if you don't have cancer, buy the darn book because I'm learning so much about how our body works. And you'll learn a lot on this podcast, or especially if you know someone who has cancer, you got to get the book, I promise. But Chris, what's your background, dude? Where did you come from? And then what are you doing today? And then we'll dive into the concepts you've been learning over the years.
Yeah, man. Well, I was born and raised in Memphis, Tennessee. And when I was in college, I started getting interested in real estate investing. Mm-hmm. And I had a buddy, our mutual friend of ours, John Paul Moses.
Yep.
And so JP and I and two other guys started this, started AREIA. Mm-hmm. We started the Memphis Investors Group, which was, there was no other real estate investing networking group in Memphis at the time. It was like 2000. And we were just some young, you know, college age guys, like, you know, kind of fired up about like, oh man, like we should do this. And we need to meet some guys that are already doing this professionally, you know, and like we both, you know, we had fantasized about becoming professional real estate investors, which were kind of like, to, in my mind at the time, they're just kind of like these just freewheeling cowboys, you know, like, and just like, you know, wore whatever they wanted, did whatever they wanted. And I thought, man, that sounds awesome. Like, I want to do that. And so we started this group, and he really deserves all the credit because he really put in all the work and to grow this group. But I started, you know, we both read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Robert Allen books and stuff like that. So we start meeting once a month. He starts running ads in the newspaper. The group starts growing. This went from 4 to 8 to 15 to, you know, 20 something. And then all of a sudden it's like, man, we need to rent a space. Perkins, you know, like this restaurant we were meeting at, this is too small. And so we started renting spaces, and then, you know, it just kept growing. And I was able to meet and be mentored by, you know, really three local real estate investors that were, you know, decades ahead of me. And that was really just a huge opportunity and turning point in my life and my career, because I had access to these guys who had all the answers, right? And for every question I had, how do I, you know, X, call, you know, Ray or Arnold or Richard. So I had some mentors that took me under their wing and were just so generous with their time and helped me get started buying rental property. So I started buying houses in 2002. And at that time, excuse me, the lending market was liberal. And, you know, all you needed was a driver's license, right? And banks are just throwing money at you. And so as soon as I learned this, like figured out like, oh my gosh, like it's so easy to borrow money to buy a rental property. I just went nuts and bought as many as I could, as fast as I could. So like the first year in business, I bought like 17. And then the next year I bought 16 or 17. And so by that, the end of that year, I had like 34, 35 properties and was just like, man, I'm just, look at me. But also during that time, I started having abdominal pain. And I thought maybe I had an ulcer or something. I mean, I was going 90 miles an hour, I was renovating houses, managing crews, like, you know, trying to lease to tenants. I was like doing everything myself pretty much and dealing with all the stresses and not taking care of myself. And these abdominal pains would kind of come and go, and they were kind of weird. I'd never felt anything like that before. And I assumed that, you know, they would probably go away or whatever, but they didn't. They got progressively worse. And then toward the end of 2003 in the fall, or really late 2003, actually in December, I had a colonoscopy. And when I woke up after the procedure, they said, we've got bad news. You've got a golf ball sized tumor in your colon. And the colon is the large intestine, for anybody that doesn't know what a colon is, besides the punctuation mark. So I, they're like, we took a biopsy. We're going to send it to the lab and we'll call you as soon as we find out. Hopefully it's not cancer. And I got the call like the next day or the day after. And they said, you have colon cancer.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 26.
26. Okay.
Yeah. So, man, you know, like that, you know, it's like in that moment, really your life changes forever. Yeah. You know, it's like, there's not a whole lot of things that happen to us in life that really change our life that dramatically.
Yeah.
And, cancer diagnosis is definitely one of them. Because all of a sudden there's a time stamp, like there's an expiration date on your life. You don't know exactly when it is, but it's like, oh, like you have a life-threatening disease.
Yeah. Yep.
A disease that is likely to kill you, you know, soon, right? Sooner rather than later at 26. And so they said, what they told me is what they tell every cancer patient, you know, like we got to get you into surgery right away. We got to get this thing out of you before it spreads and kills you. And they rush patients into treatment before they understand what's going on, before they even understand their disease, before they have time to think about their life and what may be causing their disease. And so, you know, I was like a typical cancer patient. And I said, okay, like whatever you say, you know, this was 2 days before Christmas. So I was like, ugh, is there any way that I cannot be in the hospital on Christmas? And they were like, yeah, that's fine. So I went in on December 30th. They cut out a third of my large intestine. The tumor was in that area. They realized, they took out a bunch of lymph nodes and stuff. And when I woke up from surgery, they said, well, it's worse than we thought. You are stage 3C.
Oh my gosh.
So that's like one click away from stage 4. So it was spreading. It was on its way to my liver. And they said, look, because you're stage 3, you know, because it left the primary tumor site, you're going to need 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy, hopefully we can kill the remaining cancer cells in your body, but there's no guarantee. And so, you know, things kind of just were getting progressively worse. My outlook and my prospects and all that. So a couple weird things happened in the hospital. The first one was, the very first meal that they served me after cutting out a third of my large intestines, was a sloppy Joe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I know is one of your favorite foods, Trevor.
Oh, totally, man. Once a week, at least once a week.
You love sloppy Joes.
And it's definitely the first thing I think of when I think of health food too.
Yeah. It's first thing you think of when you think of health food. It's the first thing you think of anytime you're hungry. You know, it's always like sloppy Joe. That's what I want right now. So the funny thing about sloppy Joe is like, you know, the only place you can get a sloppy Joe, you can't even get them in restaurants. They don't serve them.
No.
The only place you can get them is like summer camp, like the military, prison. And apparently in hospitals, if you have cancer. And so, and the irony, I mean, just as if that wasn't bad enough, the irony is, you know, sloppy Joe's is ground up typically like beef or whatever, like ground up beef and some sauce. And red meat is a group 2 human carcinogen. According to the World Health Organization. So there's sufficient evidence linking red meat consumption to colon cancer. And it's like, let's give the guy with colon cancer food that is known to cause colon cancer. Brilliant.
So you say group 2 carcinogen. So what, so people have context, how does that go down? Is there group 1, group 2?
Yeah, group 1 is the highest level of evidence.
Okay.
And group 2 is right under that.
Okay.
And so group 1 would be cigarettes. Mm. Also in group 1 is bacon.
That's what you were saying at the mastermind, man. You squashed a lot of dreams for people when you said that. I haven't ate hardly any bacon since you said that.
Man, I blew up some islands for sure. I'm sorry about that, but it's true. Bacon, sausage, hot dogs, you know, ham, deli meats, processed meats. Mm-hmm. Are a group 1 human carcinogen, and you don't get to group 1 unless you have a mounds of evidence. And cigarettes, arsenic, formaldehyde, you know, mercury, bacon, right? They're all group 1. And then group 2 is one step below, which means there's sufficient evidence that it's a probable human carcinogen.
Okay.
So red meat's not great, but bacon's worse. So I, of course, I didn't know any of this, right? I didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. I was just like, sloppy Joe, like, ugh, like, why? This is terrible. Like, why are they serving this to sick people? Mm-hmm. And then the next thing that happened in the hospital that was weird, it was the day they told me I could go home, which is a few days later, my surgeon came in to do his final check on me or whatever. And we were just talking about what was, you know, the next steps.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, is there anything, or any foods I need to avoid? Right. Cause I'm thinking like, I don't want to eat the wrong thing and mess up the surgery. Everything you eat's going through there. Right. Yeah. It's not like elbow surgery. Like everything you eat is passing through this part of my body that they just, you know, took apart, sewed back together.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, just don't lift anything heavier than a beer.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. That's it. And I'm like, okay. Like, all right. So, but in the, you know, the wheels are turning. I'm like, why is health food and nutrition not a part of healthcare?
Yep. Yep.
Right? I just got a permission slip from my abdominal surgeon who I thought might have some expertise on gut health or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Permission slip to go home and eat whatever you want, including just drink, you know, drink beer as a joke, but it was him saying, it didn't matter. Doesn't matter what you eat. Mm. Right. And alcohol is known carcinogen as well. So it's like such terrible advice. So I go home and I'm recovering from surgery and I'm thinking about my life and my future and I'm thinking about chemotherapy. And frankly, I was scared. Mm. Like I was scared of what it would do to me. I felt extremely vulnerable and my instincts and my intuition were telling me like, this is not for you. It doesn't mean it's not for every cancer patient. And I don't tell cancer patients not to do treatment.
Yep.
But one of the things I talk about in great detail in the book is I help them understand the risks and benefits, the perils and pitfalls of conventional medical treatment and especially cancer treatment.
Yep.
Because there are many. And one of the biggest problems in the world of cancer is that like I said earlier, patients don't know what they're getting into, right? And they have high hopes that are unrealistic. And so I just want to educate people so they make a smart decision. They make the best decision for them. Mm-hmm. Right. And they don't, you know, just jump into something out of fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think you probably understand this, but fear-based decisions are almost always the wrong decision, mm-hmm. right? Irrational, impulsive, emotional decisions. Look, in real estate, I've made many of those, right? You never buy a house because you love it. That's the worst reason to buy a house.
It is, but bites you in the butt almost every time. Almost.
Yeah, you buy a house or a property or whatever because the numbers make sense.
Yeah,
right.
And a part of that process, right? Like you have to weigh two sides of it, right? And I think that's one thing that I got out of your book in a big way is usually patients and in this case, cancer patients. But you can look at all kinds of other medical ailments. But in this case, cancer patients, they're only given one side. They're given, hey, here's your treatment plan. Yes, or I mean, not, they're not even saying yes or no. And one thing, and in your book that hit me too, was just the social influence around you, you know, your friends, your family, everyone's going, this is the path, like this is the path to do it. And if you don't do it, that's a death sentence. And that was something that really hit me as I was reading through the book going, man, I can't imagine the decisions you were having to process in your mind of here's the way that conventional wisdom says to go. All of your friends and family are saying, Chris, like, why aren't you doing this? You're crazy. And you're saying, I'm going to go over here. And I can only imagine what they were thinking, that he's basically, you know, creating his own death sentence when that's obviously not what happened.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. You just spoiled the story, man. No, I'm just kidding. But no, it's true. That is what ended up happening. But so I'm sitting there, you know, I'm thinking about everything. And again, my instincts, my intuition, my gut was just saying like, don't do this, mm-hmm. but I didn't know what else to do. Like, I didn't yep. have like an alternative plan. Right. And so my wife and I just prayed about it. You know, I was just like, God help. Like if there's another way besides chemotherapy, will you please show me? It doesn't feel right. I don't know what to do. I just feel like this is wrong for me. And you know, the idea of poisoning my way back to health didn't make sense.
That's
you know
powerful, I mean? Right there. That's
yeah.
That's
really it's powerful. Like, wait a second. I'm already sick. Like something is. I have some very simple like core beliefs. Mm-hmm. One of them is that we live in a cause and effect world. I yeah. think people agree with that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, there's a cause like to my disease. I'm already sick. Like I want to build my body up. I don't want to break it down more. Mm. Right.
Yep.
So anyway, so I was having a hard time with that, you know, that particular, the treatment that was being offered to me. And so I prayed about it. And a couple of days later, I got a book that was sent to me from a friend of my dad's who lived in Alaska. I'm in Memphis. This book shows up on my doorstep. I start reading it. That book was called God's Way to Ultimate Health.
Cool.
So as I start reading it, and it's not one I really recommend now because it's sort of some of its information there's good and some of it's like I don't agree with, but it was at that time, at that moment, like it was exactly what I needed. Mm-hmm. The guy who wrote it had discovered he had colon cancer back in like the 70s and had seen a bunch of people around him die of cancer treatment. Mm-hmm. And kind of made a decision like, well, I don't want to do that. And happened to have a friend who was just a health nut who said, well, man, you need to go back to the Garden of Eden. That's what you need to do. You need to get on a diet of raw fruits and vegetables only.
Yep.
Right. And you should probably drink a ton of Trevor juice. I mean, carrot juice.
I love it, man.
Right. Every day, like 64 ounces of carrot juice. Every
really?
Day. Yeah. Eight ounce servings of carrot juice. And so, This guy, George Malcolmus, who wrote the book, that's what he did. And a year later, he was well. He didn't have surgery, chemo, radiation, nothing. His body healed, mm-hmm. right? So it's not about a miracle cure, a magic bullet, a quick fix, lotion, potion. Like, it's not about any of that, right? It's about empowering your body to heal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was his core message is like, you're sick because you've been poisoning and polluting your body. And it's mostly because of your diet. Mm-hmm. Your lifestyle and environmental factors.
Yep.
Well, like I'm reading this and I'm going, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I was looking for. This makes sense. Like I understand now why I'm sick. And I also understand like the way I was living was killing me. Mm-hmm. Right? I have a part to play in my disease, and that's empowering, right? I mean, anybody who's listening to this, who's an entrepreneur, knows like you have to take responsibility for your situation, right? Yep, exactly. Like, and the reality of life is that wherever you are right now is the result of the decisions you've made, mm-hmm. right? The vast majority of our, you know, life trajectory has to do with our own decisions. Sometimes other people's decisions affect us in a big way, but usually it's ours.
Yep, exactly.
And so, and even if you blame someone for messing up your life, you know, if you really analyze things, you can almost always see that you still had a part to play, you know?
Yeah.
And so anyway, but people don't like that because they think you're blaming the victim. Mm-hmm. When you talk that way, right? Mm-hmm. But to me, it's empowering. It's empowering to say, wait a second, this is my fault. If this is my fault, right, then that means I can change my life. If I contributed to my disease, then maybe I can contribute to my health and healing.
Dude, that's such a good way to look at it, because when I hear that, what pops up in my mind is a lot of the stats that come out that link genes or your genetics to cancer. And I'm sure there's something there. You have the stats, I'm sure. But it's almost like if I assume that my genetics caused it, then therefore I personally can't do something to then change it. Then that's where the traditional treatment methods come in. Well, I can't do this. There's got to be a magic thing that comes in here. But then, like you said, if I at least have the hope that, you know what, maybe this was part of my environment or something that I caused, or my eating patterns or me not being physically active, I can change this. I can adjust it. Dude, that's a powerful mind shift for people.
Perfect interjection, man. Perfect timing, because you're absolutely right. So here's what happens. Cancer patients go to the doctor, and the first question they almost all of them ask is like, why did I get cancer? What caused this?
Yeah.
And invariably, most oncologists say, well, do you have a family history of cancer? Mm-hmm. If the answer is yes, then they'll say, well, it's probably genetic, it's hereditary, you know. If you say no, they'll say, well, it still might be genetic or hereditary, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, just may just be bad luck.
Yeah.
And you know what that does? That turns them into a powerless victim. Mm. Right?
Mm. Yep.
The underlying message is nothing you did contributed to your disease. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's nothing you can do to help yourself except for show up for treatment.
Yep.
Right? And we are your only hope. Mm-hmm. Okay? And in my opinion, this is like just borderline malpractice, mm-hmm. because the genetic factor, only about 5% of cancers are genetic.
Wow.
Which means up to 95% mm-hmm. of cancers are caused by three factors: poor diet, mm-hmm. lifestyle choices, which I'll get into, and environmental factors.
Okay.
Right. Environmental factors are pretty easy. Everybody gets it. There's toxins in our environment, right? Mm-hmm. If you're in the real estate business, you're around a lot of toxic stuff.
Oh, yeah. The mold, you know, we were talking about it right before this call. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mold, varnishes, fumes, construction materials, debris, dirt, like soot, like, you know, if you work in a factory, if you're a hairdresser, you're breathing in all these fumes. Most of our homes are full. Indoor air is like something like 5 times more polluted than outdoor air because of all the off-gassing from furniture, carpets, varnishes, like cleaning products, personal body care products, air fresheners. Like, it's all toxic chemical crap. Yeah. You know,
yep.
We don't realize, like, but your body is taking this stuff in every day, and it's all mixing together in this synergistic toxicity. So environmental factors are legit. And then you've got air pollution, water pollution, and stuff like that. So, those are factors that we have a lot of control over, but to some degree we don't. Like, you can't control air pollution. You should get an air purifier for your home, though, for your bedroom.
Gotcha.
And a water purifier for your drinking water. So I'm digressing a little bit, but so diet, lifestyle, and environment. Those are the three main causes of cancer, but there's an underlying cause that's difficult to measure, but it's absolutely real, and that's stress. Mm-hmm. Because stress suppresses your immune system.
Okay.
And if you're in high stress for year after year after year, you are in a state of immunosuppression. Mm. Okay. And you eventually, stress does two things. It promotes inflammation and it suppresses immunity. And so over time, what happens is your body gradually degrades and it shifts from an environment where cancer cells cannot thrive to an environment where cancer cells can thrive.
Okay. Wow.
Right? Your immune system is really what's keeping you tumor free, right? That's what's keeping you cancer free, because we all have cancer cells in our bodies every day. Like cancer cells mutate for a variety of reasons, become precancerous and even cancerous, but your immune system, there are specific immune cells that are, that their only function really is to identify and eliminate cancer cells, to kill them or to give them this sort of tap on the shoulder that tells them to commit suicide.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So a strong immune system is really key, right? But there's so many factors in our life, diet, lifestyle, and environment that can degrade, suppress, and erode your immune function.
So one question for you, and I can't remember if I read this in your book or if it just popped in my brain, but an example, and this is all conjecture, right? I'm not saying that this happened, but Steve Jobs as an example, you know, he passed away of, was it colon cancer too?
Pancreatic
cancer. And he passed away of that in his early 60s, I think, late 50s, around that age period. High stress for a decade, two decades before. Who knows what he ate and things like that. But that's one of the first things that pops up in my mind is going, man, you know, I wonder if he was able to adjust some of those environmental factors. And who knows, maybe he wouldn't have been able to achieve what he achieved then. But I wonder if we'd have guys like Steve Jobs or some other people.
Jobs' story is a great one. I'm glad you brought it up because, you know, he was actually a vegetarian, was vegan for a good part of his life and, you know, made a lot of good choices in that department.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, and people often like to say, well, if alternative therapies worked, then Steve Jobs wouldn't have died.
Gotcha.
Right. But here's the truth about Steve Jobs. One is he lived for a very long time with cancer, a very, very long time. And it's likely that his diet and lifestyle choices prolonged his life.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Second thing is we don't know exactly what he did, right? Yep. And the term alternative therapies can mean anything. It can mean drinking your own urine,
yep.
Right? So we don't know what he tried, what he didn't try. Like nobody knows really what he was doing to try to get well. And he did his health didn't really take a nosedive until he had the Whipple surgery.
Gotcha.
And which is a just crazy, crazy pancreatic surgery where they just take all your organs out of your body and like reroute things. It's pretty nuts. So anyway, the thing is, if Steve Jobs is proof that alternative therapies don't work, then the 580,000 people that die of cancer every year after conventional treatment, that's certainly proof that that doesn't work.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So, and it's another reason I'm glad you brought that up is because, you know, Steve Jobs is an entrepreneur. He's one of the most famous entrepreneurs in the world, right? One of the most well-respected, you know, beloved entrepreneurs for his, you know, innovations, the iPhone. I'm using an Apple computer right now and I have an iPhone, you know. But as much as, you know, I think entrepreneurs admire Steve Jobs, right? I don't think you could find a single one who would trade places with him.
No.
Right?
Yep.
So there's a bigger lesson here, right? No amount of money is worth dying for,
yeah.
Right? No 100%. Amount of success, money, adoration, it's not worth dying for. And what we do know about Steve Jobs is that he had, yes, very high levels of stress for decades, right? Since the 70s, I mean, 40 years of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but he was a very angry guy.
Yeah.
He wasn't a happy guy. Like you can read his biography, there's so much stuff written about him from people that knew him closely. And he was a kind of a terrible guy on a personal level.
Yeah. That's what I've read too. Yeah.
Yeah. Angry, mean, very difficult, very hard to be around.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're carrying toxic emotions like that, high stress, anger, competitiveness, jealousy, envy, like, you know, all this stuff that causes immunosuppression, right? That is stress. right? All negativity produces stress in your mind, your emotions, and in your body. Your body suffers from stress over a long period of time. So it's not a surprise to me that he got cancer because of his temperament.
Yep. Gotcha.
And so, you know, I love talking about this because, and I'm going to talk about some very specific things that your audience can do
Sweet.
To reduce their risk of cancer and to improve their survival if they have it right now. But stress is so important that you can do everything else right. And if you don't address the stress in your life, it can outweigh everything else, right? It can outweigh everything else. So, yep. So practically speaking, what I did was I adopted a raw food diet overnight. So I read this book. I was like, this is it. I answered a prayer. This is what I'm doing. I went out and bought a juicer. I was like, raw organic vegan diet, like go.
So did you go the carrot juice thing every day or did you mix
yes,
it up?
Yes. Cool. For the first, several weeks, months, it was only carrot juice all day. Huh. I did juice fasting, was eating tons of fruits and vegetables. And I love this idea of going back to a very simple diet of food from the earth only.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at what we're eating right now. We're eating all this man-made processed food. We're eating way too much meat and dairy.
Yep.
And not enough fruits and vegetables. In mm-hmm. fact, the average American eats 1 to 2 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. That was me.
Yep.
Real estate investors, you know, you're on the run. Like my life as a real estate investor is as soon as my eyes are open, like my feet are all, you know, I'm out of bed, throwing some clothes on, out the door, you know, like I got a huge to-do list. I got, you know, like I got to check on jobs. I got to go, you know, look at these other properties, you know, just like you're going 90 miles an hour.
Oh yeah.
And you're always eating on the run. I was eating for energy, which is okay. But you know, your fast food, junk food, Dr. Peppers, you know, I was if I had breakfast, it was something terrible, like a microwave sausage biscuit or something, right?
Or like a Jimmy muffin. Dean in there. Yeah.
Yeah. A muffin or like some kind of stupid protein bar or whatever, like mm-hmm. out the door as fast as I could. And then lunch was always fast food, supersize me, like fast food meal. And then dinner might be more fast food or just like my wife might have made something that resembled a healthy dinner, like there's a chicken breast and like a little side salad and some mm-hmm. green beans or something. Right.
Yep.
And, or it was like microwave lasagna.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
So that's where I was eating, you know, as a young person. And of course, high school and college was all junk food too. Now, most people, they don't get cancer that fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually did have what we think was, you know, a genetic predisposition
yep.
to get cancer as a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about genes is genes don't determine your fate. Your choices determine your fate. And we know there's a branch of science called epigenetics.
Okay.
And epigenetics is the study of gene expression. What that means is your genes all have switches, mm-hmm. right? They have switches on and off, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's on, the gene expresses itself. If it's off, it doesn't. And yep. so your diet and lifestyle and environmental factors flip genes on and off, okay?
Mm.
So based on poor choices, you can flip on cancer-promoting genes.
Okay.
Healthy okay. choices, flip them off.
Gotcha.
And flip on cancer protective genes, anti-cancer genes in the body. So again, even though genetics are a small part, you can still control and regulate and prevent those genes from expressing based on the way you live your life. And stress also, right? Flips okay. those genes on and off.
Yeah.
Okay. So I go nuts. I'm like, I'm doing this all the way hardcore. And in some ways it was kind of easy for me. And I think a lot of your audience will relate to this because as an entrepreneur, I'd always been sort of gone my own way in life. I was an only child. Like I grew up playing in bands. I went to college, but then I was like, I don't want to go the traditional path. I don't want to work for somebody else. Like, you know, just everything I did was sort of like, just like, I want to make my own way in the world. I don't want to just follow the crowd, you know? And so I was wired that way as a just very early young guy. And I never really fit in school and only had, you know, just a couple friends here and there at school.
Yeah.
I went to a small school anyway, but my friend base grew throughout high school. But the point is, like, I just looked around at all the other kids and was like, I don't know. I don't want to be like them. You know, like, I don't like the same things they like. And so when I made this decision to walk away from chemotherapy, it was sort of it was the same kind of thing. I'm like, well, I'm comfortable doing my own thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, it's really just kind of par for the course for me. It's like, well, yeah, Chris is going to do what Chris wants to do.
You can't stop him.
Yeah. But I had a lot of friends and family members pressuring me, right? And saying, you can't do this. This is a mistake. You've got to do chemotherapy. Don't you think if there was something better, they would know about it? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I know somebody that tried alternative therapies and they died. Mm. And like, so all the people around me who love me are, without realizing it, injecting all of this fear and anxiety into my life.
And that negativity. You talked about the negativity earlier, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so negative emotions is the umbrella, right? Stress mm-hmm. and negative emotions is the umbrella that encompasses, you know, fear, envy, worry, jealousy, rage, bitterness, resentment. Like, it's mm-hmm. all under that umbrella. And so now things start to get really emotionally difficult. I was already dealing with enough fear of the cancer thing, but now it's like people around me don't understand. They think I'm a fool. They think I'm being stubborn. They're telling me I'm wrong. Like this is not good. You know, this is not a good place to be in life. And so I reluctantly agreed to go see the oncologist, and the appointment just went horribly. And I detail it in the book, but he treated my wife and I badly, talked down to us, told me I had a 60% chance of living 5 years with treatment, right? Which is like, that's like barely better than a coin toss.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And told me if I didn't do chemotherapy, I was insane. Those are his exact words.
So how did you deal with the mindset side of it? Because, I mean, as entrepreneurs, I think we are, like you said, we're wired a little bit differently. We're wired to kind of tackle problems and maybe think on the positive side of things. And especially in the real estate side of things, like, mindset, I think, is something that's more common when you're an entrepreneur than people who aren't. But how do you deal with that before you circle back and talk about the next words with the oncologist?
Well, real estate, you know, I'd been in it for 2 years, but it already taught me so much about myself. And one mm-hmm. of the things that it taught me was how to be a creative problem solver.
Okay.
You know, and because you're always, you know, when you're renovating a house or whatever, or even if you're trying to put a deal together, right? There's always like obstacles, right? And surprises and like surprise problems. And so like, you have to just like devote mental energy to like, okay, like, what do we do? Like, how do we fix this, right? How do we fix this house, like, with this weird problem or whatever? And so I'd gotten pretty good at it. And especially thinking about how can I fix this in a way that doesn't cost me, you know, thousands of dollars, right? Like, there's got to be a workaround here. So I'd sort of cultivated that type of thinking already. And I had some confidence there, but also, you know, it was just mostly pure instincts, intuition, and faith that was driving me. Cause I was just like, I know what I need to do and I'm doing it, right? I know I need to do this. There's no harm in this. What they're offering me has a lot of potential harm and also no guarantees that it's going to even work. And so I felt more comfortable taking my life into my own hands, right? And living on my terms and maybe dying on my terms than to put all my faith, hope, and trust into a system that is not really designed to benefit patients, right? It's designed to extract as much money as possible from patients. And, you know, every cancer patient is worth over $300,000 in revenue to the cancer industry from surgery, radiation, chemo, reconstructive surgery, nipple tattoos, wigs, you know, I mean, all this stuff. And so there's sort of, you know, everybody in the cancer industry, they're not bad people. They're good people, just like everybody else. But, you know, they're well-meaning. They hope for the best, but they're the doctors and nurses, they're trapped in a system that pays them really well, despite the results, right? It doesn't matter what the patient's results are, live or die, they're still getting paid. right? So like you and I, we're more wired toward like compensation-based pay. I mean, performance-based compensation.
Yeah, you gotta get results, yeah.
Yeah, you do a good job and you make money because you did a good job. Like, you know, if you did a crappy rehab and, you know, then you're not gonna get a good price for your house and you might lose money.
Yep.
Yeah, angry, mean, very difficult, very hard to be around. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you're carrying toxic emotions like that, high stress, anger, competitiveness, jealousy, envy, like, you know, all this stuff, that causes immunosuppression, right? That is stress, right? All negativity produces stress in your mind, your emotions, and in your body. Mm. Your body suffers from stress over a long period of time. So it's not a surprise to me that he got cancer because of his temperament.
Yep. Gotcha.
And so, you know, I love talking about this because, and I'm going to talk about some very specific things that your audience can do
Sweet.
To reduce their risk of cancer and to improve their survival if they have it right now. But stress is so important that you can do everything else right. And if you don't address the stress in your life, it can outweigh everything else, right? It can everything else. So, yep. So practically speaking, what I did was I adopted a raw food diet overnight. So I read this book. I was like, this is it. I answered a prayer. This is what I'm doing. I went out and bought a juicer. I was like, raw organic vegan diet, like go.
So did you go the carrot juice thing every day or did you mix
it
up?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Cool. For the first, I don't know, several weeks, months, it was only carrot juice all day. Huh. I did juice fasting, was eating tons of fruits and vegetables. And I love this idea of going back to a very simple diet of food from the earth only. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at what we're eating right now. We're eating all this man-made processed food. We're eating way too much meat and dairy, yep. and not enough fruits and vegetables. In mm-hmm. fact, the average American eats 1 to 2 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. That was me. Yep. Real estate investors, you know, you're on the run. Like my life as a real estate investor is as soon as my eyes are open, like my feet are all, you know, I'm out of bed, throwing some clothes on, out the door, you know, like I got a huge to-do list. I got, you know, like I got to check on jobs. I got to go, you know, look at these other properties, blah, blah, blah. You know, just like you're going 90 miles an hour.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you're always eating on the run. I was eating for energy, which is okay. But you know, your fast food, junk food, Dr. Peppers, you know, I was if I had breakfast, it was something terrible, like a microwave sausage biscuit or something, right? Or like
well, a Jimmy muffin. Dean in there, yeah.
Yeah, a muffin or like some kind of stupid protein bar or whatever, like mm-hmm. out the door as fast as I could. And then lunch was always fast food, supersize me, like fast food meal. And then dinner might be more fast food or just like my wife might have made something that resembled a healthy dinner, like here's a chicken breast and like a little side salad and some mm-hmm. green beans or something, right?
Yep.
And, or it was like microwave lasagna.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
So that's where I was eating, you know, as a young person. And of course, high school and college was all junk food too. Now, most people, they don't get cancer that fast. Mm-hmm. And I actually did have what we think was, you know, genetic predisposition. Yep. To get cancer as a young adult. Hmm. But the thing about genes is genes don't determine your fate. Your choices determine your fate. And we know there's a branch of science called epigenetics.
Okay.
And epigenetics is the study of gene expression. What that means is your genes all have switches, mm-hmm. right? They have switches on and off, right? Mm-hmm. It's on, the gene expresses itself. If it's off, it doesn't. And yep. so your diet and lifestyle and environmental factors flip genes on and off. Mm. Okay. Mm. So based on poor choices, you can flip on cancer promoting genes.
Okay.
Healthy choices, flip them off.
Gotcha.
And flip on cancer protective genes, anti-cancer genes in the body. So again, even though genetics are a small part, you can still control and regulate and prevent those genes from expressing based on the way you live your life. And stress also, right? Flips those genes on and off.
Yeah.
Okay. So I go nuts. I'm like, I'm doing this all the way hardcore. And in some ways it was kind of easy for me. And I think a lot of your audience will relate to this because as an entrepreneur, I'd always been sort of gone my own way in life. I was an only child. Like, I grew up playing in bands. I went to college, but then I was like, I want to, you know, I don't want to go the traditional path. I don't want to work for somebody else. Like, you know, just everything I did was sort of like, just like, I want to make my own way in the world. I don't want to just follow the crowd, you know? And so I was wired that way from as a just very early young guy. And I never really fit in school and only had, you know, just a couple friends here and there at school. Yeah. I went to a small school anyway, but my friend base grew throughout high school. But the point is, like, I just looked around at all the other kids and was like, I don't know. I don't want to be like them, you know? Like, I don't like the same things they like. And so when I made this decision to walk away from chemotherapy, it was sort of it was the same kind of thing. I'm like, well, I'm comfortable doing my own thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, it's really just kind of par for the course for me. It's like, well, yeah. Chris is going to do what Chris wants to do.
You can't stop him.
Yeah. But I had a lot of friends and family members pressuring me, right? And saying, you can't do this. This is a mistake. You've got to do chemotherapy. Don't you think if there was something better, they would know about it? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I know somebody that tried alternative therapies and they died. Mm. And like, so all the people around me who love me are, without realizing it, injecting all of this fear and anxiety into my life.
And that negativity. You talked about the negativity earlier, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so negative emotions is the umbrella, right? Stress and negative emotions is the umbrella that encompasses, you know, fear, envy, worry, jealousy, rage, bitterness, resentment. Like, it's all under that umbrella. And so now things start to get really emotionally difficult. I was already dealing with enough fear of the cancer thing, but now it's like people around me don't understand. They think I'm a fool. They think I'm being stubborn. They're telling me I'm wrong. Like this is not good. You know, this is not a good place to be in life. And so I reluctantly agreed to go see the oncologist, and the appointment just went horribly. And I detail it in the book, but he treated my wife and I badly, talked down to us, told me I had a 60% chance of living 5 years with treatment. Right. Which is like, that's like barely better than a coin toss.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, told me if I didn't do chemotherapy, I was insane. Those are his exact words.
So how did you deal with the mindset side of it? I mean, as entrepreneurs, I think we are, like you said, we're wired a little bit differently. We're wired to kind of tackle problems and maybe think on the positive side of things. And especially in the real estate side of things, like mindset, I think is something that's more common when you're an entrepreneur than people who aren't. But how'd you deal with that before you circle back and talk about the next words with the oncologist?
Well, real estate, you know, I'd been in it for 2 years, but it already taught me so much about myself. And one of the things that it taught me was how to be a creative problem solver.
Okay.
You know, and because you're always, you know, when you're renovating a house or whatever, or even if you're trying to put a deal together, right? There's always like obstacles, right? And surprises and like surprise problems. And so like, you have to just like devote mental energy to like, okay, like what do we do? Like, how do we fix this? Right? How do we fix this house? Like with this weird problem or whatever. And so I'd gotten pretty good at it. And especially thinking about how can I fix this in a way that doesn't cost me, you know, thousands of dollars, right? Like there's gotta be a workaround here. So I'd sort of cultivated that type of thinking already. And I had some confidence there, but also, you know, it was just mostly pure instincts, intuition, and faith that was driving me. Cause I was just like, I know what I need to do and I'm doing it, right? I know I need to do this. There's no harm in this. What they're offering me has a lot of potential harm and also no guarantees that it's going to even work. And so I felt more comfortable taking my life into my own hands, right, and living on my terms and maybe dying on my terms than to put all my faith, hope, and trust into a system that is not really designed to benefit patients, right? It's designed to extract as much money as possible from patients. And, you know, every cancer patient is worth over $300,000 in revenue. to the cancer industry from surgery, radiation, chemo, reconstructive surgery, nipple tattoos, wigs, you know, I mean, all this stuff. And so there's sort of, you know, everybody in the cancer industry, they're not bad people. They're good people, just like everybody else. But, you know, they're well-meaning, they hope for the best, but they're the doctors and nurses, they're trapped in a system that pays them really well, despite the results, right? It doesn't matter what the patient's results are, live or die, they're still getting paid, right? So like you and I, we're more wired toward like compensation-based pay. I mean, performance-based compensation.
Yeah, you gotta get results,
Yeah, you do a good job and you make money because you did a good job. Like, you know, if you did a crappy rehab and, you know, then you're not going to get a good price for your house and you might lose money. Right? So anyway, like this appointment went badly, you know, and, but he used fear to manipulate me and convince me to do chemo. And so I made an appointment to get a port put in a few weeks, a few weeks after that, because the fear was, you know, fear is the biggest motivator of all in life, especially the fear of death. So it's like, you know, that's the best sales pitch in the world. And that, you know, these guys, from a sales perspective, they've got like probably like a 99% close rate. You know what I mean? Do what I say or you're going to die. Right? And so I had even more fear and anxiety after leaving that meeting. And I was crushed, man. My faith was crushed. I was full of fear and doubt. And like, I don't know what I was going to do. And so I just got back on my knees, man. And I was just like, God, help. Like, help me. I thought, I asked for something. Something came. I thought that was the answer. Now I'm confused. Everyone says it's not. And that's a really tough spot, man. But I had a few weeks to get my head right. And I just kept, you know, fired up the juicer, just kept going, you know, eating tons of fruits and vegetables every day, running the juicer, like, you know, just kind of just focused on health and healing. And when the day came to go get the port put in, I woke up that morning and I was like, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Like maybe later, right? Maybe later, but this is not what I want to do right now. Like it's my life, right? And I don't want to do it. And that's such an important message for cancer patients. And for, I guess for a lot of people, you know, it's like, you don't have to do anything you don't want to do in life, right? Exactly. Especially when we're talking about major decisions that could potentially kill you. Right? I mean, lots of people die on the operating table. They die as a result of pharmaceuticals of all types. Like there's real risks with all types of drugs. So I was just like, no, you know, it's on the back burner. I would rather overdose on nutrition and see what happens. And if I can't get well this way, you know, by changing my life and empowering my body to heal, then okay. Then we'll have a conversation about drug therapies or whatever. So I found in that process, in the beginning, I was very alone. I was like, you know, everybody thought I was nuts, but I gradually built a support system. I found a naturopathic doctor who was like, you know, a holistic guy. I found an integrative oncologist who supported me. And so I built this little team of support and I never went back to the doctor who said I was insane. And then I just created a system that I could reproduce every single day. Like you're a systems guy. Your audience understands the value of systems. Like if you're an entrepreneur without systems, you are running around like a chicken with your head cut off. Like your life is chaos. And I am prone to chaos. Like I'm prone to flying by the seat of my pants. But I knew like when it really mattered, like my life is at stake here. And if I die, I'm going to die a fool to everyone around me. Like, and if I die, my parents and my wife are going to stand at my graveside, right? And lower me into the ground. I'm an only child, right? And just the thought of my parents and my wife putting me in the ground was so painful to me. I couldn't bear it, you know? I was like, I have to live. I have to live for these three people. And
I love it,
that's
man.
Important. I mean, you know, finding your reason to live is so important. when you're facing cancer.
In any time, right? Like, I mean, even when you're healthy, that's one thing that I was watching this documentary years ago of people that were really in advanced age, late 90s, early 100s, things like that. And they're asking everybody what made them live so long. The funny thing is there was all these different answers. One guy over in England, like he smokes and drink. He doesn't drink water, just drinks beer. And he's like 102, but he runs marathons and he works still. He gets up and he washes these cars at a plumbing company. And this other person, it says it's God. This other person says, I'm an atheist. Like at the end of the day, all these people were really old. The one thing that they all had in common was they all got up and had some reason to live. They had a reason that drove them during the day. And it wasn't just flipping on the TV or droning away throughout the day. And that's so powerful, man, which it amplifies when you're in a life or death situation, I'm sure.
Dude, it is so powerful. You cannot put a value on it, right? Mm-hmm. And there's somebody close to me right now who is, his health is declining rapidly and mm-hmm. he doesn't really have a reason to live. And mm-hmm. but he's in his 80s, but it's sad, it's like, but you can just tell like he's kind of done with life and he's waiting to die literally. Mm-hmm. And he will even tell you that's what he's doing.
Oh man.
But I had to dig, I had to just get clarity, what am I doing here? Mm-hmm. What do I want to do with my life? I started thinking about the future, right? Who do I need to live for? Right? What are my reasons to live? And as I'm thinking about these things, I realized like, I want to be a dad.
Yep.
Like, I want to have a family. Like, I don't know. I just like, I'm 26. I'm about, I'm turning 27 in this coming year, which was 2004. Mm-hmm. And spoiler alert, I didn't die. I don't know how much time I have left. And I just thought, well, it would just be, so great to have a child or whatever, just to know that feeling. And my wife and I started talking about it and I asked her what she thought. And she, made what I think is one of the most courageous decisions of anybody I know. And she said, yes. She said, yes, I will start a family with you.
That's cool.
Not knowing if I would be around to help raise this baby.
Mm.
And it still gets me a little misty.
Oh, dude, that's powerful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Telling the story. And she loved me that much. She just loved me that much. Mm-hmm. So we started trying to get pregnant and she got pregnant right away. So
there's some meaning and message in that. Yeah, too, that wasn't an accident. That's for sure.
It's like, whoa, okay. Like something's happening here. Like my life's about to change again in another way. So 13 months after my diagnosis, I was back in the hospital. But this time I was holding a little baby girl in my arms.
Wow.
And that was reason number four to live, right? Mom, dad, my wife, Micah, and then now this little baby girl who we named Marin.
Oh man.
And so again, you can't put a value on having a reason to live and planning for the future and being, deciding to live, right? Because I made a decision. Someone asked me, and it was the scariest question I've ever been asked, was, do you really want to live? And I was like, what do you mean? Like, do I? Maybe I don't. Huh. Like, what is that? Do I have a death wish? Is that why I'm sick? I been sabotaging my life and my health subliminally, right? And I really was a very insecure, chip on my shoulder, prideful, arrogant, negative, critical, bitter. I was just a mess, I was a mess. Even though if you met me, you might not think those things, but you just had all this stuff swirling in my head all the time.
Yeah.
And even as a Christian, as a believer, like I'm trying to do good and to be a good guy and be a good person, but still struggling with lots of stuff that was stupid, just stupid thoughts and emotions. And so, and I just realized, and it was really, most of it was just rooted in deep insecurity. Mm-hmm. Why did I go into real estate? Why did I do a lot of things I did? And I think it was really just because I had something to prove. Like I just wanted to prove to the world that I was great, you know, it's, you know, that, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And that's common, man. I mean, that's crazy common, especially in the entrepreneur world where there's, you go to masterminds, right? And you go to masterminds and there's all these opportunities to compare. And any insecurity can kind of creep in there, and it's dangerous. And I think if we flip that mental model from insecurity and what am I not doing to going in there and going, man, look at all these amazing people doing these amazing things, including me. And look at the opportunities in this world. It's definitely a shift that we have to consciously make sometimes, and I know I have.
I really had a lot of envy and jealousy in my life, you know, which is rooted in insecurity, and had a hard time being happy for anyone else's success, you know, and would just be jealous of them and resentful toward people that were successful, or, you know, even though I was, you know, and had, and so what I learned to do, cancer taught me gratitude. It taught me what gratitude really is, because in the middle of being basically having a struggling real estate business and having cancer, living in a tiny little house, right? And, you know, I was paycheck to paycheck, even though I wasn't getting a paycheck, you know what I mean? But I didn't have any significant financial, like, I didn't have any significant money, okay? Like, everything I made was going right back into the business. There was nothing extra. Didn't have nice cars, didn't have a nice house. Like, you know, we're just barely keeping, staying afloat. And in the middle of all that, I learned how to be grateful, and I learned how to just every day thank God for my life and for my health and for my wife and for this little baby on the way. And I just shifted my focus, right? Because we all have a choice in every situation in life. We all have a choice. We can focus on the negative or on the positive. Every situation has both. It's the law of polarity. You've heard it. And so I just realized, like, wait a minute, I can catch myself thinking negatively and I can stop. And I can say, okay, how can I look at, where's the positive here? Where's the silver lining in this situation? And so instead of focusing on all my problems and all the things that I didn't have that I thought I deserved or, you know, wished I had or whatever that other people had, instead of focusing on that, I started focusing on everything that I did have.
Dude, I love that, man. I love it. I love it. I've got a really good friend and a mentor, Seth Bueckley. He has an office here in my building, and he wrote a book called Ambition about a year ago. Highly successful entrepreneur, sold his first company for $18 million when he was 27, lost it all, and then built another one that was even bigger and sold that a couple of years ago. And in that book, the key for him, and he's a really strong Christian, is gratitude. And he calls his daily ritual a gratitude adjustment. And he goes through a few questions in the shower every day. And he's like, that one thing that we all already know about, right? It's like this thing can change our lives. I'm sure it had some sort of a big impact in your healing too.
Huge impact. And it's a practice. Like, you have to catch your thoughts, right? Stop and think through, like, you know, what do I have to be thankful for today? And one of the best ways to really explode gratitude in your life is to start comparing yourself to people who have less than you.
Gotcha.
Right? Okay. Instead of the people who have more.
Yep.
Because guess what? Right now, there are people in the hospital dying of cancer now that would trade everything to trade places with you.
Oh, man. Dude, that's... Right? Yep.
Right? Every day that you're not burying someone you love is a great freaking day.
Oh, man. Dude. Right?
Every day you're not sitting in a prison cell for a crime you didn't commit is a great freaking day, you know? And I can go, I do this. I mean, I think about this all the time.
Oh, man.
You know, I just go on and on about, like, every day I'm not scavenging in a garbage dump for food.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. Like, we just have no idea how blessed we are and how spoiled we are. But when you take a step back and look at the world, look at the poverty and the suffering in the world, you just realize, man, I am ashamed of myself for ever complaining.
Yeah.
Right. I'm ashamed of myself for complaining. It's just, what is wrong with me? But, you know, then you just realize, okay, I know what's wrong. I'm blessed and I'm spoiled. I've taken so much for granted, and I'm gonna do my best to not do that anymore. Yes, I still complain sometimes and whatever, but I always catch myself, and I know, like, if I'm complaining, it's usually because there's something funny in a complaint, you know, some kind of joke I can make in a
complaint. Oh yeah.
But this is such powerful stuff, man. Yeah. Mindset stuff is so huge. So I had that determination. I changed my life. I created this simple system, like every day, to just nourish my body, exercise, diet, attitude, lowering stress, and forgiveness. Forgiving every person who had ever hurt me in life. And that was like the gratitude practice, where I decided I got to get my mind right, my spirit right, my emotions right. And if you're carrying baggage, you know, emotional baggage, which is resentment toward people who've hurt you, cheated you, lied to you. Hey, dude, we're talking real estate.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that has been lied to, cheated, stolen from, ripped off.
Never, man, never.
Vandalized. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
More than me, except for other real estate investors that have been doing it longer than me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the real estate business really can turn you. And I know guys that have been doing it way longer, and there's some angry, sour old guys, you know, I mean, it's really corrupted them. And because they are dealing with some of the worst elements of humanity. Right.
Yep.
And so I realized, like, okay, I don't want to turn into that, you know? And so I got to be quick to forgive. Mm-hmm. And I also realized something, like, amazing is that, and this has to do with faith too, is that every time someone lies to me, cheats me, steals from me, rips me off, whatever, like wrongs me, anytime someone wrongs me, they're actually setting me up for blessing.
Okay. How so?
It's a law. It's like a universal law, man.
Yeah.
Like, they're setting me up for blessing. And there's so many examples in life. Well, because, you know, God works all things for the good of those who love him. Mm-hmm. And he works all things for your good. And if you just exercise just the tiniest little bit of faith in that idea, which I did in the very beginning of my cancer diagnosis, I was like, okay, I'm just going to believe that you're going to work this for my good. I'm just going to choose to believe this. That's what faith is. You just choose to believe it.
Yep.
And the more I brought myself back to that belief system, the more I saw, like, amazing things happening in my life. And so now when something goes wrong, when someone cheats me or whatever happens, I get, you know, for a second. Right. And then I just stop, catch myself, and I'm like, you know what? Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. You just set me up for blessing. God, I'm expecting it. I'm expecting a blessing coming, and I forgive them, and I'm, you know, letting it go. You know, I'm good. And then I just go back to gratitude, right? I have so much to be thankful for. My gosh, my life is wonderful, and I'm not going to let this ruin my day. You know, so it's, again, it just goes back to that, like, getting control of your thoughts, right? And knowing where to, when you get knocked off course, knowing how to right yourself quickly before you just end up stewing in anger and all those emotions that are not just mentally destructive, they're physically destructive. So that's this kind of stuff I'm doing, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's rolling around in my mind all the time.
I love it.
But there's a, you know, there's such a great story. The best example of this is there's a story in the Bible. There's a bunch of stories like this, like, but the story of Joseph in the Bible, who, you know, his brothers sold him out. Mm-hmm. They sold him into slavery.
Yep.
Right. I mean, his own brothers sold him to be a slave, and he was gone. Right. Because they were jealous of him because he was his father's favorite. And he went through all these trials and adversities, but because his brothers wronged him in such a terrible way, what they didn't know, and he didn't know, is they set him up on a life trajectory to become the second in command over Egypt.
That's right? Dude, that story. I was reading a book the other day that brought that story into it, and it's crazy because you can only imagine what he was thinking during those years.
It's the worst thing that could happen to you, being sold as a slave.
Yep.
You know, like, You know, I mean, just it's the worst thing I can think of is being someone's slave.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, God worked it for his good. It was part of the life path. And, you know, anyway, I just love that story so much. And that was when I had the epiphany, I don't know, but I just did. And it was like, you know what? I just need to believe this instead of, oh, this is bad and woe is me.
Dude, so, I want to drive people to your book again, and I've got your website pulled up, chrisbeatcancer.com. And everyone head over there, chrisbeatcancer.com, grab the book. I mean, it's a national bestseller. When we were over there in Boise, you're crushing lots and lots of books, and you're doing it the legit way, right? Like you're not doing what a lot of other people do.
And I didn't buy a bunch of copies of my book or pay it people to like, you know, get me on bestseller lists. Like people bought the book.
A lot of people
made the Wall Street Journal, Publishers Weekly, USA Today bestseller list. The New York Times completely snubbed me, but they're notorious for doing that. And they're very snobby, and
they're setting you up for a blessing, man. They're setting you up for
blessing. Yeah, exactly, man. It's exactly right. And I was disappointed. I was actually disappointed because I outsold six of the top 10 books on the New York Times bestseller list. When my book came out, I outsold six of them, and they just pretended like I didn't exist. And that did hurt, man. That rejection hurt. That's like training for the Olympics. You get there and then they disqualify you for something that you didn't even do.
That's
like,
wild.
It's like, ah, oh, like, man, but that, you know, better things are coming. And so it's just like, I had a couple days, and I found this out when I was with you in Boise. That's when I found out they had like dissed me.
For the
book. And I was struggling with it. You know, I had a happy face on the outside, but inside, like I was really kind of like really struggling. Like it was kind of a crushing blow, because I had worked so hard to get there and did everything right. And like, this is going to be a New York Times bestseller. And we like got the sales numbers and it was awesome. And then no, but anyway, I just decided, you know what, something's better's coming. I don't know what, and I'm just going to not, you know, I forgive them if they did it for nefarious reasons, which can't be any other reason.
Exactly.
But they're just like, we just don't like this guy. No, we're just going to ignore him. But anyway, the book's doing great. I'm so happy about it. And, but as I promised, I want to make sure I leave your audience with some very practical stuff.
Perfect.
The number one thing that you can do practically to prevent and help your body heal cancer is eating 10 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. It doesn't have to be raw. And I still lead a plant-based diet. I'm not all raw anymore. I you know, my diet went through different phases, but fruits and vegetables are amazing for your body. Like they give you so many anti-cancer nutrients that you don't get from meat and dairy. You don't get them from McDonald's. Like you don't get them from Dr. Pepper's or Starbucks. Right. And, eating 10 servings of fruits and vegetables is actually pretty easy, because a serving is only half a cup. So a plate full of vegetables is like 3 or 4 servings. So if your breakfast, lunch, and dinner is primarily plant-based, so like oatmeal for breakfast, fruit smoothie for lunch, big plate of veggies for dinner, or giant salad or whatever, you've done it, right? And that's basically the way I eat every day. I eat simple, you know, food from the earth every day. Organic is very important, because we know that pesticides cause cancer. And so the more organic food in your diet, the better. And I was 100% organic, and I'm pretty close to 100% organic now. When I travel, it's a little tricky. And so I make exceptions, but that's huge. So 10 servings a day. The second thing is you need to exercise 30 to 60 minutes every day.
Cool.
This is simple stuff. Like the great thing about health and nutrition and truth is truth is simple, right? It's just like, if you're not doing it, you're not helping yourself. So 30 to 60 minutes a day of sweaty exercise, anything you want to do, doesn't matter. If you're moving, sweating, your heart's pumping, you're huffing and puffing, you're doing it right.
Dude, that's it. It's the foundations. Like what you're talking about here isn't magic bullets. It's go back to actually using our bodies and fueling them the way that they're intended to be used and fueled, you know?
And it's just creating simple routines every day, right? Getting enough water. If you're not getting enough water, when are you going to drink your water? I drink 20 ounces of water first thing when I wake up. I'm just go, like, because I'm not that thirsty throughout the day. So if I don't just force myself to get a bunch of water in right away, I won't drink enough water. So 30 to 60 minutes of exercise. You have to do it. Like, put it in the schedule, like put it in your calendar, in your iPhone, and it's just a non-negotiable, right? I had to actually, the best thing I ever did for myself exercise-wise was I joined a CrossFit gym. Mm. And the reason that was good for me is because it was expensive.
And this was years ago.
Yeah, you know, this was years ago. It was like maybe 2010 or 11. I was way past cancer, but I just struggled with keeping up, you know, going to the gym or keeping up steady exercise. And I had one of those gym memberships. It was like $20 a month or something. Right.
Yep.
And so then, you know, this CrossFit thing, I was introduced to it. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. I did, you know, some intro classes and they're like, yeah, it's $175 a month. And I was like, man, like, whoa, that's way more expensive than I'm paying, you know? And I really had to think about it, but I knew, I was like, if I put this money down, I'm going to show up.
Yep.
And I did. It worked. Like, I'm still doing it. It's been like 7 years or whatever of doing that kind of stuff. And they whip you into shape in so many great ways. And I'm in the best shape of my life, no doubt, because of you know, that type of training. But yeah, you know, sometimes you got to kind of bribe or not bribe. It's almost like blackmail yourself, right, into healthy habits. So that's good. And then the third aspect, environmental, like it really, the lifestyle choices. One, being sedentary is terrible for you, right? We're both working at stand-up desks right now, aren't we?
We are. Yeah. We are.
Being sedentary, sitting all day is terrible. It's the new smoking. Sitting is the new smoking. Cigarettes are the number one cause of cancer. The number two cause of cancer is sitting. Just kidding. It's not
I was gonna say, man, where's the study on that?
You're like, whoa, no, but it, you know what it is though? This is just as surprising. Most people haven't heard this. Mm-hmm. The second leading cause of cancer is obesity.
Okay. Yeah.
It's obesity, right? And you know, no one's born obese. Well, some babies are born a little fat, but obesity is largely caused by our dietary and lifestyle choices, right? Yep. Eating high calorie foods and not getting exercise, not moving. Right? You eat more than you need and you don't burn it off, your body's going to store it. That's all fat is stored energy, right? Mm. It's saving it up for the famine, for food scarcity time, which never happens because we live in a rich nation. So obesity is the second leading cause of cancer. There's 13 different cancers linked to obesity because it puts your body in this inflammatory state that's also immunosuppressed. Mm-hmm. It's causing physical stress on the rest of your body when you're carrying all this excess body weight. So exercise, like I'm just trying to hammer this, right? Exercise and movement are so important. And then alcohol and drug use, right? I mean, they contribute to disease, contribute to cancer, whether it's pharmaceutical drugs or illegal drugs. I do enjoy a beer, a glass of wine and stuff occasionally, but you just have to be very careful because if if you drink every day, you're elevating your cancer risk.
Yep. I mean,
it's the science is settled on it. Like if you drink daily, you're elevating your cancer risk. So don't drink daily, right? A couple drinks a week, you're in the safe zone. You're okay. You know, but, you know, and then smoking cigarettes, cigars, all that stuff is bad too. So like, these are things anybody can do, but you have to like make up your mind that I don't want to get cancer, you know? Yeah. And here's the scary statistic. You've heard it. One out of every two men will be diagnosed with a form of cancer in their life.
That's scary.
Yeah. One out of every two, half of your audience, half of your team members. Right. And it's almost one out of every two women. It's between one out of every two and one out of every three. So it's kind of like, it's getting close to the man statistic. But again, like we said at the very beginning, it's not genetics, right? It's not bad luck. It's our diet, lifestyle, and environmental choices. And so if you're not serious about prevention, boy, you should be, right? Because it's like you're flipping a coin. Will it be me or will it not? You got one coin toss, bloop. Like, what's it going to be? So your choices determine your fate. Your choices affect your gene expression. Your choices can protect you and create a long, healthy life, or they can promote disease and a short, early death. Earlier, you said, you know, there's these old guys that live to be 100 and they smoke cigars and drink whiskey. and people love to bring that stuff up. And I'm like, that's great, right? That's terrific. But we know statistically, if you think that's going to be you,
exactly, right,
you are statistically not likely to live to 100 smoking and drinking.
You think you're going to hit the lottery where for some reason that you're not, that's not going to harm you, you know? And it's kind of scary to run in any of our lives that way, whether it's financial or health. And that's one thing I want people to really get out of this. And one of the main reasons I want to bring you on is, like, number one, you've got the background a lot of our audience has, but also number two, it's about, so if anyone does have cancer, knows someone, I would love for you guys to go to chrisbeatcancer.com, grab the book, read it, and make your own choices and make your own convictions based on it. Cause we barely scratch the surface on what he goes into.
Yeah.
And this has been his life for the last almost 15 years of diving into this. And you know, he's not still a full-time real estate investor. No, by the way, I'm going to hop on a podcast and talk about this stuff. This is what he does full time is in that world of health and nutrition and helping and working with tons and tons and tons of people to help them heal naturally and get them back where they need to be. And then if you look at the other side of it is, you know, hopefully you never get cancer, but what if you can adopt these practices? That's why I was reading it. I'm like, I really hope that I never get it. And this is going to help ensure a better chance of not getting anything like that. But also I just feel better, dude. Like I feel better in the day to day. I have more energy and I'm able to make my bigger impact in the day to day and what I'm doing now by following these things that you talked about. And in there, you give a lot of protocols, you give a lot of types of foods, or even, you know, turmeric. I think that's how you say it. You talk about the different properties of that and how it can tackle this particular types of cancer. And I just really encourage everyone to go grab that. Like I said, not even from the fear side of it, of, oh, I hope I don't get this. It's let's adopt better practices, y'all. Cause we all walk around, our towns and we see how unhealthy people are. We talk to our friends or family members and they talk about how they're out of energy and out of this, but it's really it's all these things Chris is talking about. That if we adopt them, not only are we going to live better lives, more productive lives, more impactful lives, be happier, but we're also going to be massively making our bodies healthier and reducing the chance of cancer, or in Chris's case, healing cancer altogether. And that's just amazing. I love it.
It's, man, yeah. And it's kind of like, you know, the Matrix analogy is sort of a tired analogy, but like when the light bulb goes off, like when you take the red pill or whatever it is, and you realize, like, and you look around at all the people around you, your friends and family and loved ones, and they're all suffering with these maladies, right? Yep. Like, I'm overweight, heart disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, inflammatory diseases, arthritis. Like, it's the food. It's the food. It's all the food. Like, it's crazy how much our diet is playing in our disease as a culture. And we don't realize it. I talk about this in the book, and there are cultures all over the world with a fraction of the cancer rates of the US and other industrialized nations. So US, Canada, Australia, the UK, like all the top, you know, westernized industrialized nations have the highest rates of most cancers. And the poor, what they used to call third world, now they call them developing countries, have some of the lowest rates of most cancers, right? Yeah. Because they don't eat a bunch of meat and dairy. They don't eat a bunch of processed food, fast food, and junk food, right? Their environments are relatively clean in terms of pollution and things. And most of them, because of their socioeconomic status, they're doing physical labor, right? They're working with their hands. They're getting fresh air, sunshine, and natural forms of exercise, walking everywhere or riding a bicycle, you know? And all of those things produce health. You know, they all work together. There's a recipe for disease, right? It's not one thing, right? Yeah. It's like you can't bake a cake with flour only, right? There's a recipe for disease and most people are following it. But there's also a recipe for health. And so, you know, it's not one thing. It's not one supplement. It's, you know, there's not one thing that makes you healthy. It's all of these small decisions that you make on a daily basis add up to a big result, right? It's like we've been so conditioned, and I know you get this, entrepreneurs get it, marketers understand it, but like everybody wants like the hack, right? What's the health hack? I want a bio hack, right? How can I hack this? Like, how can I make some tiny change that produces some huge result, right? It's like the quick fix or the, you know, almost like a lottery mentality, right? And it's, there's another version of hacking where it's like, you're just like breaking down everything and you're, and learning as much as you can about somebody else's business so you can emulate it. That's great. But this, this short-term or shortcut mentality, it's rooted in laziness is what it is. Right. And so the last thing I want people to think is that I promote some kind of magic bullet or miracle cure lotion or potion, right. That's going to transform their health. Like the only way to transform your health is to take massive action. Mm-hmm. Like entrepreneurs understand massive action produces massive results.
Yep.
Minimal action, minimal results. Like it's your choice.
Yep.
Right. And leveraging your time and doing things like that, of course, are wise things to do in business and all that. But when it comes to your health, like there's no shortcuts. You can't pay somebody to work out for you.
Yep.
Right. You can't pay your personal assistant to eat healthy for you. You know, you could pay her to prepare your meals though.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Things like that. You can, there's ways, there's efficiencies you can exploit, but at the end of the day, like, you know, we are the result of our choices, like I said in the beginning. And like, and so I just want to encourage people, like what I hope the book does for someone who doesn't have cancer is I hope it gets them excited, like about the results they can get
yep.
in their body. Like you said, like more energy, getting back to your healthy weight, just feeling good, eliminating just aches and pains and maladies that are caused from nutritional deficiencies or from foods that are just exacerbating problems in your body or whatever. Yep. And then down the road, hopefully never having a cancer diagnosis, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my goal. And so if for the prevention folks, for the people that have cancer, my goal is to help them heal, you know, help them do everything they can do in their power to heal, whether they're doing conventional treatment or not. Like I want to empower them to change their life. And so they have this epiphany that I'm not a victim, you know, it's not bad luck. I'm not a victim. There's a reason behind this. And I have power to affect my future.
Dude, I would love to end it with this. And this is so powerful, y'all. I mean, I want you to go get the darn book. Okay. Get the darn book. And my whole goal
was darn book.
Get the darn book. Seriously. I mean, it's on my nightstand right now. And the reason I'm saying this is we barely had a chance to touch on the rest of his story, the story of how the healing of his cancer unfolded, the different appointments where the cancer kept on shrinking and shrinking and going away, and all the emotion and everything that attached to it. And then the exact plan of everything is all inside of that book. Okay. So he gives it all in there, but I've got a close friend, actually. This guy I hired full-time yesterday. He's starting as my content guy now, as far as my videographer podcast guy, he's going to be touching this podcast. And when he saw your name on my schedule, he's like, no way. He's like that guy helped to heal my father-in-law here in Roseburg, Oregon. And
it's
crazy. When he was telling me this, I was kind of having chills because I was going, I just met Chris and he's an amazing dude. And Brady's like, that book is on my father-in-law's counter right now. And he's been tuning into Chris's website for 2-3 years or something like that. And I remember seeing Tim when he was in the middle of everything. And I think he did have some conventional treatments, you know, but he was heavy every single day committed to this. And Brady said, man, he'd be doing push-ups every single day. Like anytime that he had a chance, he was out of energy and he was like, he was just in the depths of the cancer, but he'd always be moving. He'd always be juicing. He'd always be doing the types of things that you walked through in there. And they said that was basically like, they're big believers, but that was like the Bible. And then this methodology helped him get through it. So I just want to throw some love to you.
Dude, that's awesome.
You're changing lives, man, in a big way. And saving lives in some cases, inspiring people to adjust their lives. And that touched me close to home because I know Tim. I see him almost on a weekly basis. And he's here because of some of the choices he was able to make and by God's grace as well. So I appreciate you, man. Appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Everyone go to chrisbeatcancer.com. Get the book, check it out, or go to Amazon and grab it too. Hey, man, I just appreciate your time on here and the energy you bring to this world. We need more people like you.
Thanks, Trevor. Man, it's been fun. It just such a privilege and an honor to be able to talk to you and talk to your audience and share my story, dude. Thank you.
I love it. Thank you very much, man. Everybody, have an amazing rest of the week. Go check Chris out. We'll talk soon.